On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
I think it would be easier for me to list the things that I haven't drank since Christmas Eve.
Hey, aren't you that guy everybody hates?
No, man, no.
This is Tall Can Audio. Follow along on Twitter at Tall Can Audio or at Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio.
Just do it!
What's happening, everybody? Welcome back into the Tall Can Audio podcast. We are, I guess, back to work, back to school, back to lockdown, whatever your world looks like. Have a good Monday. Matt over here, Rob over there. What's happening, man?
I am also freshly tucked back into work, and I'm loving it, to be honest with you.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
My soft ass has been off since the 23rd of December, and I have,
getting
in that period,
softer by the minute.
I have not lifted a weight, got on a treadmill. But I have ate and drank just about everything in
sight.
Honest
to God.
I think it would be easier for me to list the things that I haven't drank since Christmas Eve than it would be to, you know, including a lovely...
like a glass of water. The body's just calling out, hit me with some fucking H2O, man.
Yeah, well, you know me. I am constantly on the water, but which is a really bad thing for the man with the smallest bladder in the world. But yeah, including a cocktail called a Saint Germain, which is with an elderflower liqueur, has kind of a
yazoo.
right up your yazoo. yeah, has kind of this grapefruit kind of a. Anyways, tasty nonetheless.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it again.
No, so not that tasty.
But anything's worth a go at least once.
Easy.
Well, yeah, it all depends. If you've listened to our end of year show where Matt went into detail about, you know,
we're all inclusive grinder, here, man.
Grinders. Yeah, of course we are. I have no problem with that.
Oh, because you seem to be passing that quite easily over the table here. What did you just crack open?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Matt.
Uh-huh.
I am fresh into dryuary. So what you heard there was a crisp club soda.
That is back-to-back podcasts.
Over top of cranberry.
For those of you who missed the New Year's Day show that Michaela and I fired up on New Year's Day, funny enough. But right around 12:30, shortly afternoon, and it was a little early in the day for a recording like this. So she had some sort of, I think she called it lime bubbly. It was also dry. Now, this had nothing to do with a dry January. It was just a little early in the day, post New Year's Eve for her. And she wasn't ready for the hair on the dog quite like I was. So I'm planning to, what I would call, lighten up in January. But it's not going to be dry. I will, there will still be pints on show days. But between, I'm going to do my best to keep her dry.
Yeah, and I'm actually going, you know, so there's no alcohol. Now, we'll see. Last January, I think I made it to the 16th.
Yeah, right? You did not make it the full month, I can tell you that.
And as I was doing as I was sitting here, I'm like, recording on the 3rd, 10th, 17th, 20th. That's 5 Sundays in January, dude. It's like the worst case scenario. So
when I think you may find what the listener finds on the Monday morning drive to work, this show sucks without alcohol.
Yeah, I get it. Now, worth noting, what did you get into beer wise over the New Year? I don't think we've spoke since then.
So throughout the holidays, I think we did mention on our New Year's Eve show, you had dropped a couple things here before Christmas. So on New Year's Eve, I hit the chocolate orange stout from Covered Bridge. I don't know that it had a name. I think it just said, I can't remember.
That's it. You got it. That's it. It was a barrel-aged stout.
I don't know that it's something I would do often, but I enjoyed it more than I expected to because I'm not typically a big citrus kind of in anything, food or drinks or, you know, mixed whatever. But I enjoyed that more than I thought I would. It was kind of, to me, it hit you with the citrus right up front. And then as it kind of trailed off, it had that kind of sweet chocolate and stout to it that I enjoy quite a bit. So that was one. And you had also left the oats and hoes.
Oh, that's good. Am I right?
That was a great one. And it didn't say it anywhere in the description. I was looking at it untapped. I was whatever. But it had like a smoke to it. Like that I was kind of pulling off of it. And you know, I really dig that. So
yep.
Throughout the holidays, that's kind of where I landed. Also, just before Christmas, our pal Amy, she dropped off some beers and some baked goods for me here from that her and the kids had. She said she let Lucas, their 6-year-old son, pick out the beers. And then she kind of had to circle back. And you know what? If we're doing this, let's do this. And
let's really do it. Something that Matt would enjoy, perhaps.
So she circled back, knows I've always dug the Downtown Brown. And so there was a couple of those. And then, you know, just the usual kind of rum and cokes and whatever else. I will say on New Year's Eve at about 1:30 in the morning, I received a FaceTime audio. I very rarely will accept the FaceTime video calls. This was FaceTime audio from our buddy Matty Lang, who was feeling no pain at that time of day. And we had a nice chat. He was having a New Year's Eve, and he's one of those guys who kind of makes his rounds after midnight and after bringing it in and just checks in on people and talks a little. And I won't say I was sober, but he was well ahead of me. And at 1:30, I'm winding her down. I'm crashing hard and he's raring to go. So it was good to talk to Matty, but maybe we'll have to do it somewhere a little closer, not completely, but closer to sober here in the next couple of days.
Well, it's one of those things where, you're jumping out of a car that's moving 60.
Yes.
Right. That's what it's like. And you're like, and again, I've had a couple of drinks, but you are way out there in front of me.
Exactly.
And we've all had those experiences.
Of course, man.
And Matty's a good social guy. So, he would be doing his bit to, stay safe.
Yep. And he was doing them all by phone, but still doing them.
So I had a couple of things. So the last beer I had of 2020 was the same. The chocolate orange from Covered Bridge. To me, at 7.4, it felt a little bit more like an imperial. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
As opposed to if you compared it straight up with the oats and hoes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which to me is going to be a go-to. That's the
nice
one.
Beer.
That's the one on Untappd that I said buy 8 or 10 or you won't want to share. That was part of the review because to me it's gorgeous, but I didn't get a lot of citrus until it started to warm a bit.
Yeah.
So maybe the beer fridge is too cold, but at my first pull, I'm like, I'm not getting much of any chocolate or orange from it. And then you really started to get the more of an, again, to sound like a douchebag, the bouquet or the aroma, right? Of as you breathed it in before you took your pull on the pint, right? Yeah. So I liked it, but I'm donating the other one. So I didn't like it that much.
Yeah. No, I've still got the second one here. I don't know when I'll get to it. To me, that's not just an average, you know, Saturday and the hockey game's on. It's maybe an occasion beer. So that'll sit in the fridge for a bit. We'll see. But I will drink the second one because I did enjoy it. But like I said, I'm not always big into the citrus thing, and I was getting a bit more than that from maybe because I don't always dig it. You're more sensitive to it or something, right? And
for sure.
So
fruits and vegetables, you're out.
the lemon and wheatgrass beer that I've raged against on this podcast before. Yes. I should mention,
I don't dig the veggies on their own. I certainly don't want them in my beer, unless you're a stick of celery and a Caesar.
Okay, yeah,
nestled up beside that big pepperette.
You were there, I think, and I think maybe you had one too. We were with this is years ago now. Maybe the last game of the regular season, Leafs and Senators, and we went to Real Sports beforehand, and we were hanging out with my old man and my family that was there. They weren't coming to the game, but did you have? I know my old man was drinking. Did you not have one of the Caesars there?
Well, they called it the Real Canadian Caesar.
Yes. Did you have one?
I did have one.
Yeah. Tell them about it.
I didn't love it.
No. It was pretty beefy for a drink.
Well, there was a pile of shit. It was like a loot bag in a pint glass. And half of it, so there was vodka and Clamato, but there was also half of it was Molson Canadian.
Yep.
And then there was a pepperette. There was celery.
But like a big, not like a gas station pepperette. Like it was like a sausage-sized pepperette drop.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's not your hot rod. It's right. It's an actual thumb size, yeah. You know, 6-inch long. And I'm going in all kinds of directions here that with is, this.
Yep.
Still the pepperette, ladies and gentlemen. Exactly. Matt's family. We did get into all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I do remember the wave of Leaf jerseys pouring into Real Sports that day. So for sure, I do remember it.
Well, that was one of those, and I think maybe 5 or 10 minutes after we left there, I got a text from my sister that said Darcy Tucker just walked in here with a tour group, right? Like that was, so we had missed that, but that was a cool spot. It didn't last too long. Maybe this wasn't something I planned on getting into. Do you think there's anything to Real Sports is, for people who don't know, right there in Maple Leaf Square was the first one. And that first year it was open, it was voted ESPN's sports bar of the year in North America. But everything was expensive. Everything was like high end for what a sports bar is supposed to be. And it wasn't more than a year or two later, they fired one up in Ottawa. And I don't think I ever went in there where it wasn't cooking, right? Like where there wasn't something going on and business was doing good, but at some point they just kind of threw up the sign and said, yeah, we're closing down. And now, to be fair, it's not like I was going in there every week. You'd go when there was an event, and maybe that's sort of when everyone was going. Do you think there was any sort of, because there was talk at the time, there was resentment in the market because it was, even in Ottawa, it was owned by MLSE and whatever, or do you just think it's one of those things that didn't fly?
Well, I think it's a combo, like everything in Ottawa, it's a combination of many things,
yeah,
or at least a couple. I do think there is that feel to it, right? That it is a Leaf bar, air quotes, right?
Yeah.
And I had been there a couple times. Again, I think we met your family, 2015 World Junior. World Junior.
Yeah, fucking right. That was fun.
And we threw back a pile of everything.
And then went to the Highlander and threw back a pile more.
Oh man, that was, yeah.
Also $60. Now closed. God damn it.
Yeah. Well, honestly, everything in the core, right? Yeah. Through the pandemic, like staples.
Yeah.
But as you said, I think it also, Ottawa as a government town, there's a lot of people pretty tight to their wallet, mm-hmm. right? And it was expensive.
Yes, it
right?
was.
Like, I think I remember going to the one in Toronto and having 3 pints of Guinness, and maybe it cost me $45.
Well, I remember like 2 pints of wings was like $39. You're like, Jesus.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And just,
yeah. Yeah.
Maybe close to $40. Sorry.
Still,
it to me, it was like, oof, that's dear. And I'm cheap too.
Sure. And really. But it's cool. Like for an event, I was in there for the World Cup semifinal, Canada, Russia. I was in there for the World Juniors. I was in there for a couple of Leafs and Bruins games in 2013. And it was they did a really cool job of, they had these giant screens and the food was great and stuff, but it wasn't like St. Louis Bar and Grill, right? Where you just roll in there on a Thursday, have a pint and a couple wings and roll out. If you were going in there, it was going to be a costly evening.
Hey, and I thought you brought that up on purpose because you and I also ended up after a Leaf game in the St. Louis Bar and Grill.
Drinking Guinness till closed, yeah, till they made us leave.
Out of the devil's sized jug, yeah, you're like, right. Guinness in a 28 ounce glass. That's, you're right. Like, yes, please.
Well, right? That's true.
that's walking out, and I'm like, and I kept bumping into that girl in front of me, and she's like, are you poking me in the back? And I'm like, if you'd pick it up. And she's like, you want to poke me in the front? And I'm like, get moving, man. Like,
it's too cold for this shit.
This is it.
Yeah.
And anybody who's going to just proposition you flat out like that, you probably want to give the Heisman to.
No, you know what? I don't want to poke you in the front.
Yeah, I'm
push you in the snowbank.
And face wash.
We got a show coming up on Thursday evening. I'd encourage you all to stick around. Michaela Schreider is going to be back, and she's got a little announcement for us. So that's going to be kind of fun. I hope you will all check that one out. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening right now. Just make sure it's right there. It's a little follow. It's a little subscribe. It's different on every app, but make sure you hit it. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Talkin Audio, Facebook.com/Talkin Audio. Give us a little poke in the back, poke in the front, whatever you like. And
no, actually don't.
All right. Well, he's out, but
I'm not interested in that at all. Don't touch me.
Rob didn't have the common decency to ask.
Oh yeah. What do you got over there?
I'm sipping on back to day one. Of the Nita calendar, the blue squared, their amber, really enjoyed that. So picked up towards the end of the calendar. I made an order from Nita to carry me through the holidays, and so had the amber, had the pitch stout, had the Percy Mapleton porter, and a bunch, of course, my favorite, the Mr. Brown Has Gone Coconuts. We got that in there. So that's what's happening here. We've circled back to the Blue Squared Amber from Nita Beer Company.
And Matt's true to his word, right? He's loyal as that old hound dog. I like the Blue Squared, and he's living it right now.
Yep. And stay tuned. Our friends from Vimy are about to get a knock on the door because there's a new keg fridge coming into the studio.
Woo.
And I think I've mentioned that previously, that in March, right at the beginning of the pandemic, when you want to limit your exposure to the world, and a keg would allow you to do that in terms of your beer, the keg fridge bit the dust here in the TCA studio, just went right down. And so I wasn't in a rush to get something new because, you know, we're not having people in studio anymore, and it's a lot of beer to drink on your own, people. So, but now that we've approached the new year and, you know, maybe grab a smaller keg or two and then, of course, circle back to a place where we're having people back in studio. There is a new fridge coming and it's purdy. So we'll put some pictures on our Instagram at TallCanAudio. And I think Vimy, the good guys over at Vimy Brewing Company, will be the first to fill that keg fridge for us. So
nice.
Look forward to that. Why don't we start with the world start? What are we, 30 minutes into the podcast? why don't we start with the World Juniors? As we sit here and record, it is Sunday afternoon and we are on an off day. The quarterfinals are finished. We are down to the final four. On Monday, we will see Canada versus Russia and the United States versus Finland. A couple of interesting matchups there. Why don't we kind of circle back to the quarterfinals a little bit? I guess the only one that you would consider to be an upset would be the Finns and the Swedes. And in most international hockey competitions, it's not much of an upset. But I think in this tournament, you would probably say so based on most experts saying the Finns were coming in a little shorthanded compared to what they normally are. But the Swedes were missing some pieces too. Did you have a chance to watch that game?
I watched the last 10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
So really just
the before good part.
Just before Lundell scored to tie it up.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, this seems like
this
seems like it's maybe going to go to overtime. I'm not sure I'm that invested in this matchup, but those two countries.
Well, that was the best quarter.
Yeah. Well,
in terms of rivalry and competitiveness, right? Like
for sure. But we talked about it on the World Junior Preview show that no matter what you do, and we talked about the world last men's world championship team that the Finns won 2019, that was a team of absolute nobodies.
Had two NHLers.
And neither of them scored.
Nope.
And that team won the world championships. So to me, the Finns, because they're tenacious and they do all those things right,
yeah,
you never really discount, you know, that's a hockey on both sides gets up for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you look at those Swedes after now they're 54 game win streak in the round robin. Not only is that busted, but quarterfinals, you get out of here.
Yeah, no, I posted the same thing on Twitter in the round robin when that got busted. Was it the Russians who beat them first? I said, I have a feeling the Swedes will be disappointed to lose this game, but not at all disappointed to have lost that streak. Like, whatever, let's punt that to the curb and be done with that storyline forever.
Yeah, the people who are best served by that is next year's Swedish World.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Yeah.
They're like, wow, it's not us. Those losers last year broke the streak, right? And I think that's a streak that I think was all Swedes were thinking about it, right? One gold medal in the streak.
Yeah.
And really just get rid of it. Psh, nobody's talking about it anymore now, and you can start fresh.
No, I agree with that, yeah.
I did watch a bit of it. I also watched more of the Germany-Russia, which I found to be fascinating, right? In terms of
held her tight.
Yeah, well, and the Ottawa rooting interest. I've mm-hmm. found the Germans to be
the Germans.
The Germans.
To every be very time I can't resist it.
Well, and it's like the bishop. Every time you see the bishop, so it's I found the Germans to be an interesting watch for the entire tournament, except for strangely the 16-2.
Yeah, funny Canada, that.
Canada drubbing, right? Where I think I could have given them better goaltending. I'm almost positive. I could have borrowed your goalie equipment.
Yeah.
And got in there and gave up less short side goals. Like I almost positive, man. I'm like, at least take away that. Right. Anyways.
Because I think the first or second goal in that game was Philip Tomasino, and he was the Oshawa Jennies guy. And so I'm kind of pulling for him, right? That's who I've kind of got my eye on for Team K. And the first one, it's from like almost the goal line, and he kind of slides it under the pad. And I cheered, but I'm like, oh, that's gross. Like,
see, I thought it was the Tomasino goal where the goalie actually slid over and exposed one third of the short side. And I'm like, oh my God. Yay. Kind of just
throw that, the old wooden thing in there, right? That you used to use for target practice. And the Germans were more competitive once they got their guys out of quarantine. And apparently one of them was the number one goalie, stabilized things a little bit. And they went on to make their first quarterfinal and then hold the Russians tight to it. The Russians have been weird to watch, you know, lost to the Czechs, tight to the Germans, and then, blew out Austria, beat the Americans, like kind of up and down, which I guess isn't uncommon for the Russians. But why don't we hit it while we're here talking about Germany? The raging erection here in Ottawa for Tim Stützle. There was talk as soon as the game was over, he had a flight booked that night to Ottawa. And if I was a betting man, I would say that the Senators had flights booked for him the last night of the round robin, in case they didn't get out of that. The night of the quarterfinals, in case they lost there. The night of the... There was a flight with his name on it every single night that he could have been eliminated, would be my guess.
Yes.
sorry, buddy, but why don't you get to the airport?
Yeah, there's a car waiting for you right now. Don't get out of your gear.
Just go.
I'm super stoked about the kid. To me, I've said this before. To me, you watch him at the World Juniors, and he reminds me a lot of watching Marian Hossa in the Memorial Cup when he played for the Portland Winterhawks. To me. And that's old guy talking now because we're talking, I don't know, 97 or 98.
Right.
But that comparison. So I am excited for him, right? And if he had a career that came anywhere close to Marian Hossa's,
sure.
Perfect. That being said, I'm scrolling through Twitter this morning and I'm embarrassed for a lot of people out there, right? Talking about tracking flights and that's whatever Twitter, else. And you're like, dude is 18 years old.
Yep.
Simmer down, right? Like it's okay, people. He is just leaving. Yes, he had a great World Junior and his line was dominant.
Killer. Had you ever heard of Paterka before this tournament?
Yeah, only because the line was going to be Paterka, Reichel, and Stutzla.
Yeah, okay.
And so at the draft, Paterka wasn't taken in the first round.
Right.
And so as the Senators' third first overall pick, the Ridley Gregg pick came up.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a lot of people clamoring for the Paterka pick. And he went maybe second or third in the second round.
Yeah. And I think to Buffalo, who I don't know, they could have had somebody else's pick, but I'm pretty sure it's Buffalo. And I can remember I had no idea who that guy, and obviously I'm not going to downplay it. Stutzla was by far the best player on that team. He was driving things for them, all these things. But I'd never heard of that kid, and I'm looking at him and some of the things that he's going, Jesus Christ, like, who does that guy belong to? Like, holy shit. Yeah.
Let's grab that guy, too. And who's right? That Florian Elias guy?
Right.
The guy who actually centered that line. So yeah. Stutzla ran the whole tournament as a left winger.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which is where
yeah,
which is where Ottawa is saying they want to play him this year.
Right.
Right, so he didn't take, I don't think he took a draw in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't even centering that line.
He was unreal, better than, because here's the thing, like with a lot of these kids, especially in their draft year, it's still a 19-year-old's tournament. And not only is he not 19, but he's also playing on, you know, a weaker team, and he was a dominant player. So full credit there. That doesn't always happen in your draft year where you stand out like that at this tournament. He did, full credit to it, and now he's going to arrive here in Ottawa. I imagine that by now he probably has already arrived in Ottawa. The flight tracking Twitter will let you know.
It's what Twitter told me.
Right. 7 days, I believe, he has to quarantine, 4 negative tests, and then he would join Ottawa with, I guess, what, like 3 days left in camp, 2 days left in camp?
Yeah, well, does he have to quarantine?
My understanding is 7 days. It's an NHL protocol, not a province protocol or anything like that.
Because when you see those, they've waived for returning NHL players. And I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's 7 days is my understanding, and 4 negative tests before you can join your teammates. I think that's a league deal, not a province or, and he's been in Canada for weeks now, right? So that's that part aside, full value, right? But I was with you, and I was sort of afraid that, and I'm sure it's part of it, just my Leafs, whatever, like, all right, settle down. Like, but he just kept dominating the tournament. You're like, I kind of get it. Like, I'd be excited too. So we'll see. Gets into camp. He's not going to have much time in camp against grown men, but he has been playing against them in the German league. So we'll see. I think there's going to be a lot of kids and a lot of teams with rookies looking, you know, I wish we had at least one exhibition game. I think the Sens are obviously, well, he's here, so they're obviously going to give him his 8 or 9 games or whatever that is this year, the equivalent, but it looks like he's here for the year.
I'd be very surprised if that kid's not here for the entire year. Right, just due to his makeup and the year, they maybe they send him to the AHL, but they're burning a pro year.
I think we talked about this before Christmas. I get it. He looks ready, but man, it seems dumb. Like, and maybe I'd feel different if there was tickets to be sold, because that's what Ottawa is selling right now, is the future, right? And the rebuilds. Yeah, you want the kid here and get excited, everybody, and buy some jerseys and stuff. I would get that. There's no tickets to be sold either, right? Like, I don't know.
But this year is about, in this bizarre and interesting year, and I don't want to call it a throwaway year because it's crucial for the progress of this rebuild, right?
Yeah.
Because it's at that spot where does it continue to its upward trajectory, or does it sort of stall because you've made bad decisions, right? Be it to rush kids, not bring them up, block their way with veterans, whatever it is you're doing, right? And so it was interesting. I did see a tweet where somebody said, wouldn't it be cool if Stutzla scored 4 goals against the Leafs in his NHL debut?
The one I saw was 5. It's like, just to be one better than Matthews.
Oh, okay.
And of course, I'm like, it's always about the Leafs, man. We're always right there in your head, right? Like,
and that's, so again, more of the, you bring this on yourself.
Yep.
Small fry.
It's a once in a lifetime kind of roll of the dice. Maybe he'll do it, but it seems pretty unlikely.
It seems extremely unlikely.
Right. So, if Ovechkin's not lighting up somebody for four in his debut, like, it's a total roll of the dice. And yeah, you set yourself up to be disappointed. We can circle back to whether the Sens are blocking people's way and what that's going to look like. Let's stay on the tournament for now. And come off of Germany a little bit. What did you think of Canada kind of through the round robin and then being held tight by the Czechs, who had already beaten the Russians? And you can kind of see how they do it, clogging things up and blocking a bunch of shots. And what did you think of Canada, I guess, throughout and into the quarters? And now how do you feel about them facing off against the Russians here?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I've sort of, as everybody else has, as you meander through this, you know, you're sort of underwhelmed against when they play the Slovaks. You're like 3-1, 4-1, whatever that score was. Yeah. And you see them put the boots to the Germans. You see them when they get rolling against the Swiss and, you know, they put the 10 spot on them.
Yep.
But then you see where they just don't score as easily for a team that's as skilled as they are. I was super interested going into Saturday night's quarterfinal to see just how they would do against a counterpunching team like the Czechs, to see what would happen with a team that could potentially put pressure on them in their own zone. I didn't love a lot of Canada's own zone play, right? Which
all
would show
this. They're getting pinned in like for by lesser opponent. When the puck comes into Canada's zone, it stays. Like, they're not strong at breaking it out yet. Like,
right. And so that was alarming that they gave up, like, I can't remember what the number was, 20 slot chances.
Yeah.
You give up that many chances to the Russians?
Yeah.
There's trouble.
You're getting burned. Right?
And so if you look at, because the Finns, you know, they rolled the Finns big time. Like, that first period was as dominant as you're probably going to see without the score being super indicative.
Mm-hmm.
So all that's great. I've loved Devin Levi, right? The guy just seems super steady.
Yeah.
Right?
And he was strong against the Czechs.
Right. These A-grade chances that pop up, and it's like, boom, there he is. And he's smothering the puck.
And the puck just dies off him, right? Which is gold, right? Like,
and so, but I have some concern about that. And the flip side of that is, and I know this team scored 29, 30, whatever, like 40 goals through the quarters. But to me, I want to see their ability. And for the most part, they haven't had a lot of that traditional Canadian jam.
No.
Right, of if we can't finesse the puck into the net, right, that I'm going to lug the puck into the net. Right, you're Curtis Lazar type stuff. If you harken back to that 2015 Worlds, I'm just going to carry the puck into the net with me.
Well, and go ahead.
No, that's you go ahead.
I was just, all I was going to say is, yeah, it kind of feels like it's just off by a half step still. And I was laughing watching the quarterfinal because Duthie and the crew and whatever kept bringing up, well, the power play, right? The power play went 0-5. And it just felt like, I get it. They destroyed everyone in the round robin. You're scrambling for, yeah, but, right? Like, we need that talking point kind of thing. But it's not like it was wrong. And it wasn't even just the power play. It feels like across most of the lines and whatever, I don't know if it's the quarantine. I don't know if it's the lack of action. I don't know if maybe it's just not there. The chemistry hasn't really existed, right? You haven't found one line that's kind of like constantly, yes, that's the go-to line. Those guys are clicking. Those guys are. And if you have, it might have been the fourth line up until the injury to
Newhook.
Yeah. And now everything kind of got shift a little bit. But those guys at least were kind of buzzing around and seemed to be. But the passes are just off a little bit, right? And then the chances are just missing a little. And you can kind of see what's supposed to happen there and what this is supposed to look like. But they're just a half second behind or a half step off. And maybe as the tournament rolls on, that goes away and it is just a rust thing. Or maybe this group just doesn't kind of have that chemistry that some of them do. I don't know yet what that is, but I think the Russians are going to make you find out fast.
Right. And I won't pretend to say that I saw all the Czechs games, But I do know when listening to, as everyone else did, right? You listen to the panel and you listen to Craig Button, and they're saying, yeah, the Czechs have problems with pace.
Yep.
Right. And yet it seemed like Canada had a really hard time turning the corner on them. Right.
Yep, for sure.
There would be all these breaks down and then you would see them try to turn towards the net, and it wasn't there. And so I'm not sure if you're missing that half step, if you're hesitating, yeah. But to me, it looked really obvious that the Czechs wanted to keep them on the outside and they weren't able to make it to the middle of the ice consistently, right, to generate more of their own opportunities. And I think that's traditionally what Canada does so well.
For sure.
Right? When in the past, we accused the Russians of coming with these uber skilled teams that don't necessarily gel and try to one man show it. And you're good if Dylan Cousins is in on a break or, you know, Mick Michaels, and you're like, I'm feeling confident.
Yep.
Right. That we're going to finish that. But how do you finish off that 2-on-1 or?
No, I think that's interesting. I do think this Canada team resembles more those old Russian teams. Like you're talking about, I'm not obviously, you know, the Brian Burke top six, bottom six thing where you bring a bunch of plugs just to say you have penalty killers and stuff. But
you're Rob Tamners.
Right. But there does seem to be a lack of something on this team where they do look like, man, and maybe that was unavoidable when you had these camps the way you did. And then you got locked in your hotel room for 2 weeks and didn't have a ton of time. Maybe it was just, hey, that guy looks flashy, right? That guy looks like maybe that was sort of unavoidable. But this does look a little more individualistic than we're used to with a team Canada, and who knows, like they could come out and roll the Russians and beat the Yanks or whatever, who knows, but right now it does feel a little pretty, right, as opposed to is there any jam there, right? Like,
well, and see on the back end, Schneider, Gouley, both those guys have some jam. Newhook brings a little grit, and Holloway, the Oilers draft pick, right, he's a sturdy little guy, right, and he doesn't mind going through, right, and doing some of those things, but it seems to be here as opposed to a consistent thing, right?
No, I agree, so yeah.
I would really like to see it, and it'll be fascinating to watch tomorrow, right, to see. And I think when we talked about, you looked at a division that went, okay, we got the Americans, the Russians, the Swedes, and air quotes, traditional hockey nation in the Czechs in fourth, and you're like, that's the better division.
Yep.
But then you look at it, the top two in this in the Canadian division, one, the Germans pushed the Russians to 2-1, and then obviously the weakest of the eight is the Slovaks. But I'm not sure that the division.
That's interesting, eh? Because I said to somebody during the Canada quarter that I was feeling almost the opposite. So it's just a perspective. Like the Czechs look like they've been facing monsters all week. Like they've been there with the Swedes and the Americans and the Russians, and they're not scared of what we're doing right now. And as we're rolling through the first and the second, and even a little ways into the third, you're going, they're good. Like they're happy. It's 2-0. They're just looking for a bounce or a power play or whatever might happen here. It's funny. It's just a perspective thing, right? The way you look at it sometimes. I kind of thought, wow, the Czechs look like they've been playing beasts for a week, and they're outgunned here, but they're not intimidated. And
well, and I don't think either are wrong.
No.
But were you surprised to hear on Saturday night when they were talking about the Czechs, who again, to me, that's one of those top six hockey playing nations, right? Like, and then they said that the Czechs haven't medaled at the World Juniors since 2005 Grand Forks.
Yeah, that was wild. Because I just finished pumping their tires as a hockey power, like we're saying, right? Like,
yeah, well, and so then you remember, and they actually brought it up last night, and I was talking yesterday as well about, about the sort of the golden age of Czech hockey, right? Which was the 98 Olympics, the 2000 Men's Worlds, the 01 and 02 World Juniors.
Yeah.
All gold.
King
all
hockey.
Gold. And I went back and looked at that World Junior, the 01 Czech roster from 2001 that won a gold medal. And I'm like, who's on there? There must be a bunch of studs, right? And I'm flipping through
Martin
it. And I'm
Prochka.
Like, yeah, no, it's Martin Prusik, just for the record.
Well, there's a two. Prochka's a dude.
Yeah, I just threw
Prusik
it out there.
Prusik was the goalie. He's
Yeah, Prusik was the goalie.
A Senators, I think. Yeah.
I can't remember who the goalie was, but this Czech team had Rostislav Klesla on it.
Nice.
Pavel Brendl.
Traded for Jaromír Jágr. He's going to be a star, man.
You have Radim Verbata.
Nice.
Martin Erat.
There's got to be a Dvorak on one of these teams.
No. But there is Thomas the Turtleneck Plekanec. that's not, you know, obviously, you know, three of those guys had, because you look at Klesla and Brendl, really not much going on there. But yeah, that's the team, man. You'd think from that a smaller nation would be able to springboard into some kind of contention, but no, not happening.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting. The USA Finland matchup, I think we both assume the Americans will take it, but I assumed the Swedes were going to beat the Finns, so we'll see what that looks like. Anything else on this tournament before we move on to other things?
It will be super interesting to watch, though. Yeah. The Canada game, I am, as I said, when you asked me on Christmas Eve, we talked about my interest, and my interest was super high.
Yeah.
And it waned a bit due to, you know,
the repeated ass standings.
Yeah, and it's not good. It's not good for, you know, it's not good entertainment. I remember in the 2009 Worlds going to see Canada beat Kazakhstan 16-0. And you're like, there's nothing entertaining.
I'm starting
about
to
that.
Find my own goal horn annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is it. And you're actually cheering for the Kazakhs to
come
do
on,
something.
Kids.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'll be interested to see what kind of response Canada has, right? In terms of, are they able to generate more dirty goals? And I don't think the Russians are going to present the same defensive issues that the Czechs did either.
Nope.
I think that's fair to say. So,
but I think Askarov has the possibility of throwing up something that you don't like.
Well, yeah. When you go into a winner-take-all game against probably the best goalie in the tournament, sorry, Devin.
Yep.
But this is, you are asking for trouble, right?
For sure.
But it's at the semifinals, and so guess what? There should be no weak teams here anyway.
Exactly.
So at this point, bring it on.
Moving off of that a little bit, I did want to talk just a little bit about the NFL regular season wrapping up today. And honestly, at the best of times, I'm kind of hit and miss on the NFL this year, maybe less than in any year in recent memory, which is surprising given the lack of sports. You'd think I'd have been all in. For some reason, I just wasn't. The reason I bring it up is there's been a lot of people tooting the horn of the league, mainly the league itself, but some of its reporters on, hey, we did it. All the games in,
no cancellations.
There was some postponements, but we are finishing the season on the day we always planned to finish the season. And I'm just, you know, man, I'm having a hard time wanting to give them the same pat on the back that they're giving themselves, because they absolutely did finish the season on time, but at the expense of and a complete disregard for the health of its players and, frankly, the product it was presenting sometimes to the audience. You're a little more into the NFL than me. I know you're not a hardcore. Did you find yourself watching any more or less than usual, and kind of what's your takeaway as they have finished on time and will start the playoffs here?
Yeah, I probably watch less as well. And I don't have a team. I have in the past, you know, picked up a bit of the Rams.
Right.
I enjoyed what they had going on, especially when they had Gurley out there. They were exciting, right? Had some killers on D.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding offense until they up 3 or 5 spot in the Super Bowl. But so yeah, less. I enjoyed also the demise. I enjoyed the demise of the Patriots.
That was fun.
Right. And I get it that they had, a bunch of guys who abstained, right.
Yep.
Who didn't play this year. They had obviously the removal of Brady and their lack of quality drafting and trading stuff away is coming home to roost. And really I've seen you and Maddie both sort of taking your shots at the Bills. That's a good story. That's a good story for me. I'm interested in that. I'm not a Bills fan, but to me, that's anytime you see a ne'er-do-well franchise turn around, I don't care where it is. Short of Toronto Maple Leafs, perhaps.
Well, and you're right. Just to settle there for a second, Maddie obviously is a Patriots fan, doesn't care for the Bills. To me, it was for most of my childhood, teenage years, couldn't have cared any less about the NFL, but I resented the Bills as this, you know, if you're new to the pod, I grew up in Toronto, I'm listening to the Fan 590, and it's Toronto sports media, and the Bills, our team, finished, but fuck off. I know you're supposed to cheer for your closest geographic team. That's how sports fandom works most of the time. When there's an international border involved, you lose me. And I don't give a shit about the Bills, right? Like, yeah,
it's the crappy Rochester Fox feed that you were getting.
That is a huge part of it. WUTV in Buffalo, man. Fox 29. North Tonawanda.
Yeah. And at the time, Barnes. Right, I was living in Southern Ontario. I was living in London.
Yeah.
For some of their heyday, you know, your Bruce Smith and your Andre Reeds and your Jim Kelly's and your Thurman Bust-A-Move Thomas. Like, and I actively cheered against them at that time in their heyday, right?
Because
again, I was in the same boat. I didn't want it being forced.
You don't tell me who to cheer for.
Yeah, I choose none.
Right.
Yeah, and so it's one of those things. Whereas, yeah, I find that an intriguing story this year, right?
Sure.
So,
an intact table to be found in upstate New York.
Exactly. On fire or busted.
Yeah.
But flipping back to the original thing here, and it was, to me, it was the Adam Schefter tweet saying, hey, week 16, all games in.
We did it, guys.
And the first tweet underneath is, who fucking cares, Schefter? Do you get a bonus? Like that. That's the first comment underneath. And I'm like, all right, he's reporting it. Like, he's just shooting it out there, and you got to come with that much venom. Well,
so I sent you that tweet, and you replied a while later with interesting replies. And then I had half written a reply that said, oh, I don't read the replies. Those are only morons hanging out in the replies. And I was like, oh, he guess who told me check out the replies? Let's just leave her as it stands.
I'm all right with that, because really I like to check them out.
Just the replies are often gold, but only for their comedic value.
Right. No, this is it. This is it. And so, you know, you got people saying, you know, what's so great about that? I'm watching it with one less person in my family due to the pandemic. You know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, right? Even that's over the top. That's not Adam Schefter's fault or whatever.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Direct that at Schefter. It's not like, and so it's easy doubling back and back again. It's easy to complete a season when you have complete and total disregard for athlete and staff health or the integrity of your product.
Yes, whatever. Like, next guy up, we're still like playing.
When you can just take a team that is decimated, like the Baltimore Ravens, and then just keep moving that game further and back till it's actually in the next week.
Yeah. And now everyone else involved, they're opponent's next opponent, and like it, you finished, I guess, but
like, right, you got teams like the Browns last week going with no wide receivers, right? You're just like,
well, the Broncos going out there with no quarterback, and you're just like, this is, yes, you finished, but you showed me a shit product that week, right? Like,
and that's all I'm saying is you know, the shield, right? It's all about this quality product that's put out on TV three, sometimes four nights a week, and people clamor for it, right? And yet, at the end of the day, slaves to the buck, slaves to just trying to get it done at all costs. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's ridiculous. And so it's another black eye, kind of like they went through the phase of, you know, all the domestic assaults and all these things that were happening, right? And you're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. It becomes such a black stain that you just sort of go, it takes away from any kind of on-field product. So, well, I've watched less.
It reminds me a little of baseball in that they decided they were going to power through. But at least they had the decency for a while to go, all right, Cardinals, you're shut down, right? The Marlins, you're not playing for. Now, I get it's different because you play every day, and they understood going in, maybe we're going to have to decide the playoffs based on win percentage instead of wins if we have to, right? If somebody plays way less games than someone else. And they did seem to care a little bit more. Whereas the NFL was just like, no, we play Sunday. If you don't have enough guys, like, then sign up the towel boy because he's coming in and we're playing.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because this is normally the time of year, even through my relative indifference sometimes to the NFL, where I do get more invested. The playoffs are different. It feels different as you build to the Super Bowl, unquestionably always the biggest sporting event of the year. Do you expect to be more invested next Sunday when the playoffs start, or is this kind of a throwaway year and you're just kind of, yeah, we'll see?
See, the NFL is never must-see TV for me.
Right.
To me, I treat the NFL like the Food Network.
Sure.
There's nothing else I need to see. What's happening over there? Mm-hmm. Right? And you flip it over and you're like, oh, it's guys' grocery games. Don't care. You go and you go, oh, it's Jacksonville, Carolina. Don't care. Right. But if you sit down and it's Green Bay, Seattle, you know, I'll check out a bit of that.
Sure.
Right. If there's something interesting, right. If it's the Bills putting a beat down on the Patriots like last week,
I have time for that.
I got time for that. Right. And you go, yeah, that's epic. Perfect. Yeah. But that's how I treat the NFL. And so, you know, the hype machine gets ratcheted up. And so we're all like the little trained mice that we go over and we grab our little, oh, hey, yeah, that must be important. Watch now. Right. You know,
I definitely grab a little something and say it's important.
Yeah. Very little something. Yes.
Really? But little wasn't enough. Eh? You had to just, nah, it's very little.
Yeah, it's true. Matt's hideous. Yeah. Totally. Look over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sorry about that. It's a habit. Old habits die hard, man. Schrodinger's douchebag.
I think the other thing we're going to touch on is, as of today, all the real teams, all the good teams, started their NHL training camps.
God bless you.
Why don't we start? Because we were going to talk about this before the holidays, and we didn't. Just briefly on this idea that the seven teams who didn't get invited to the bubble based on, you know, finishing low or whatever it was, got to start their training camps 3 days early. And I believe what we first heard months ago was they would get 2 weeks.
Correct.
More than anyone who had been involved in the bubble. And I'll, before we go any further than that, even then I thought it was stupid. If you haven't played since March, or you're a team who lost in the first round of the bubble or the play-in round or whatever, you know, you had a week and a half of training camp and then 5 games, you know, are you in that different of a situation over the 2 weeks you got to play midsummer versus the team who hasn't played since March? I guess a little bit, but I thought it was kind of dumb. I think it's even stupider now that they waited so long to negotiate, so long to get set up, and it's become such a rush to get the puck dropped that the seven teams who did not play in the bubble were given 3 days. Like, either it was purely a Gary saving face, we gave you more than everybody else, but it means nothing. If you know anything about sports, athletes who've been sitting on their ass since March versus athletes who've been sitting on their ass since the first week of August, 3 days is, you know, like, it means nothing to me. And it just seems like a face-saving thing. I think you should have let everybody start on the, what was it, the 29th or the 30th? Or
30th.
Or everybody starts on the 3rd. And it's not because I think, you know, you've given anybody an advantage. I think it's more of a slap in the I think 2 weeks might have given those teams enough time to go, maybe they have a bit of an advantage. They've had their legs moving and some extra practices and a lot. 3 days, yeah. It's just a complete, we told you we'd give you more and we gave you more. You gave them nothing, man.
Yeah. Well, and as you said, if you're done on March 17th,
yeah,
and then you're a team that's done in the middle of July, mm-hmm. or you know, the end of July, whatever it was,
yeah,
you are still talking about a sizable
month.
And so it's not like that 3-week period that you had that you were up and running is going to benefit you now.
Right.
So it's almost like the initial 2 weeks, which I was in favor of as a Senators fan, right? Just in the fact that you get your guys in,
yeah,
you get everybody going, you trim off some of the fat earlier and you go, okay, we're going to run a little leaner now.
Tempo. Yeah, right. Sessions. Yeah.
But ultimately at this, the 3 days is really just a, yeah, you know what? Sorry, we felt bad for you, but we're going to give you this.
We promised you more. Here's more. It's nothing.
Yeah. And so it is a bit of a, yeah, this is how it's going to be. So, yeah, the 3 days, and I saw Jeff O'Neill tweeted out, and I'm not sure. I don't follow Jeff O'Neill, so clearly somebody else tweeted into my timeline where he's like, look out for those 7 teams that have the 3 extra days. Exactly. They're going to be ripping out of the gate.
I think that's how we all kind of feel a little like, okay, good for you, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Couple of notes as we start. Matthew Barzal is not in Islanders camp today, not yet locked down. I wonder, I guess Dubois signed over the weekend, Friday, whatever the hell day it was, 2 years. Jarmo Kekalainen came out and said at day one of their camp that they offered him 2 years, 3 years, or 8 years, and he took the 2. So make what you will of that, because there's also been rumors flying around that maybe he wants out of Columbus. Cirelli got signed sometime through the holiday season. So Barzal is really the last big name RFA, I think, that you would say is still out there. But anything else today as camps kind of, I know the other 7 teams are, but as the first few days have rolled on here, is there anything of note to you that has been an interesting storyline?
Well, just a comment on the Barzal, right? It's a 2-year, $5 million, I think, AAV, 3.5 the first year, 6.5 the second, right? So when he gets qualified, because he'll still be eligible for that, yeah, it'll be at a much higher number.
Dubois,
right?
Or Barzal?
Dubois. Sorry, yeah, okay, I was. The other interesting story to follow is to me is the PTOs,
yeah,
and the guys who are rolling into camps. Like you see Hoffman getting a PTO with St. Louis,
yeah.
Travis Hamonic getting a PTO with, and it escapes me who
I hadn't seen that he had one. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. He was excited and the team escapes me too, but that this guy, these are the guys that are getting PTOs.
Well, like,
right?
How does Sammy Vatanen not have a job yet? Like there's some of these, you know, like, and the Hoffman one by all accounts is done. They're just not able to sign it until the season starts. You put Tarasenko and there's somebody else on LTIR. That'll make room for them to give Hoffman the deal. That's all but done. They just can't announce it. I hadn't heard about Hamonic, so that's interesting. But there's guys out there floating around that were good NHL players last year. Not stars, but good players that just aren't locked up yet. And to me, you know, I wonder if we're going to see another day or two of somebody showed up injured, somebody isn't quite ready, and, you know, maybe Vatanen does have a deal with so-and-so, but it's quiet until you announce the injury and we have room on LTIR. But guys are getting squeezed here hard, man.
Yeah, and do you think just in this whole PTO LTIR thing, you know, when Kucherov went on LTIR and he needed the hip surgery and stuff, and you're like, does that happen? Do they push for it now, or is it something he tries to play through another season if they're not in this position? Like, to me, it almost feels like that's been pushed ahead of schedule.
Well, and why not have that surgery in October? Why are you just doing it now, right? Like, right after you won the title. Yeah, Gord Miller made an interesting comment on Twitter. Maybe you saw it after the Sens made the trade with the Lightning. In which they got a second and Paquette and Colburn. I kind of like Paquette. I think he'll fit in good there. Colburn maybe in and out of the lineup. We'll see what that's going to look like. But Gord Miller said, like, this LTIR thing has gotten out of control. He goes, I think in the Kucherov situation, like, you should maybe be able to put your own guys on LTIR, but you can't trade for guys to immediately Now, that's just one guy's opinion, but it's interesting. The Leafs have been doing it for a while. They had Nathan Horton and David Clarkson.
Robidoux Island.
Sure. Well, Robidoux, they had at least signed at the time. They didn't trade to get that LTIR.
Yeah, I know what I'm just saying. It's all out there on the, island.
So I wonder, like, to me, that makes sense. If you did want to fix this down the road, maybe that's the rule is, yeah, Kucherov, you can LTIR. He's your guy. He has been for a long time. And he's hurt, and it cleared some things up for you. I do kind of agree, though, with Miller in a principled stance that you can't do what Toronto does all the time and just find that guy.
Or you can't be like Ottawa's taking on Ryan Callahan, who just retired. I think we're going to hang his jersey from the rafters.
Yeah. He didn't even mention them in his retirement press release, man. So disrespectful.
it's the same in Arizona, where Hall of Famers Marian Hossa, Pavel Datsyuk, and Chris Pronger, they're all, you know, former Coyotes, illustrious careers, right? That never played a game there, but bad contracts end up there. So I think if you want to do that overhaul, and I agree with it, I think it gets tied into the same idea you floated before, which is, you know, you tweak it with, you draft guys and maybe they count, their dollar counts for 80% on your own cap versus guys who you sign as free agents who maybe count, you know, for full value or slightly more.
Right. You can sign Austin Matthews as a franchise player like the NBA because you drafted and developed him. John Tavares, that's coming in at full 100% of whatever is a free agent.
And this way you are allowed to then operate now. You as long as it's
punishing teams who draft and develop well like that. The Blackhawks were the key example forever. They won three cups every single time. They're selling off key parts of, in most cases, the guys they drafted and developed. You're punishing them for being good. That was bullshit.
Like, yep. Well, and you have a manager who's not great at his job.
Well, there's that. But
sorry, Stan, but I think you're the guy who's going to be out and when they fix that thing, because now Taves is saying, I'm out. That's the other interesting story that came down.
You think there's something to that,
Well, I know you guys talked about it, but it's just him saying, what? Nobody told me there was a rebuild. We're good to go. I want to win. I want to keep going. And then next thing you know, I've got this.
So you think where he says I'm feeling less than energetic and a bit lethargic is because, I haven't trained for shit since you told me we're not competing anymore.
I've put the same effort into this that you have, Bowman.
I'm rebuilding right now.
Yeah, this is retooling, I think they're calling it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but again, it's one of those things where you go, really? The timing seems odd. And so, I'm out there. I'm out there pointing fingers and saying, I wonder. Right. I wonder.
Well, that's interesting.
Moving along.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, as the bitter Leaf guy, I got to tell you, I'm enjoying that Barzal is not at day one of camp, because all we heard over and over was Lou would never have let the Willie and Mitch situations get as far as they got. He has clearly let this one get that far. I wonder, in a general sense, if there's much else, you know, that stands out to you as we get this going. I do wonder, why don't I stat, like, what do you think of the, like, to me, there had to be one exhibition game. You've got to be allowed to get your rookie in there somewhere and just see if he's ready, as opposed to, well, here's opening night and I know there's a taxi squad, and but we're burning a game of our nine games. I think it's seven games this year. It's been reduced
seven
to
games. Yeah.
You know, could you have not found an exhibition game somewhere? Like, to me, that's maybe the most noteworthy part of this, is it's just inter squad scrimmages and here we go.
I guess they are so tied up against it, right? In terms of travel and everything, they weren't willing to push.
Yeah.
The one extra game, which seems, I know it seems ridiculous.
Yeah, it does.
Right. but at the end of the day, you go, you could use something, right? Cause guys who have never tasted NHL hockey.
Yep.
And if you look at, for the most part, guys who were off for 2.5 months or so and then kicked it up in the bubble, they just had a week or 10-day training camp, and then they got ready to, and for the most part, the level of hockey was quite up-tempo, right?
Well, do you think everyone sucked or everyone was good? like you were all at the same level, but
yeah, well, it's hard to tell. But I felt like as a viewer that the intensity was pretty good.
Yeah.
And so to me, there was some quality hockey. So I think it's closer to you're asking now rookies to jump into that.
Yeah.
I think whatever happens off of our 2 weeks of inter-squad games, that yeah, you're gonna run from that right into, I think, fairly high level hockey.
I hope so. Did you have any thoughts on what was a weirdly? I think Pierre Dorion was on Ottawa radio like 2 days before the Stepan move, saying this is our roster, we're done. And yeah. Then he made that deal and then said we're good to go and then made another one. Do you have any thoughts on that? The whole thing, Stepan, Cedric, Paquette, and Braden Colburn coming in. There was a second out, a second back in.
That's really it. Ottawa has essentially taken on these three bodies for virtually nothing, right? It is the movement in the seconds, but that's about it. They're all on expiring contracts at the end of the year.
But Stepan especially is blocking somebody. Like, he's a center, and some of the young Senators center prospects aren't that young anymore, right? Like, Logan Brown has to make an impact. Is it Colin White? I mean, he's going to make the team. What is he? What's Norris going to be? I don't know that you needed. I liked Paquette. I didn't really have a problem with Colburn, especially with the way that deal was structured and clearly what it was trying to do. I thought the Stepan thing was weird. I didn't see any reason to do that.
Well, and I agree with you. It clearly shows to me, especially when you look further at it. Like, to me, Cedric Paquette, he's going to slide right in on that fourth line, right in between Austin Watson and Nick Paul.
Yeah.
Like, that's your fourth line, and that's going to be a line that is going to
irritate the piss out of an opponent nine times a year.
Yes, and so they'll be on it hard. And I love Cedric Paquette.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who he plays a rugged style of game and can skate.
Yeah.
And so as a Senators fan, it tells me when you look at Colburn, you know, not only are you bringing in another, air quotes, veteran defenseman, he's also a left shot defenseman, right? Yeah. So that's the same side. You have Shabbat, you have Wolanin, you have Brännström, and you have Mike Riley, again, for one more year.
Yep.
I don't love Mike Riley, but you already have him there.
Yes.
And so to me, what I see is you know, Colburn and Riley sort of
taxi squad rotation.
Or yeah, in and out on that. And I think you see Brännström either play a bit on the right side, or once the AHL opens and you play 42 games against the Maries. Yeah, it's like whatever. But I think, and so likewise with Stepan, I think what you're gonna do, and again,
step off.
Yeah, homie. but yeah, I think what you're gonna see is also like with Brännström, if you're gonna push him back for another year into the AHL, I think you're also looking at that with say Shane Norris, right? Josh Norris.
Yeah.
Shane Pinto.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Norris is looking at
looks like a douchebag. That was the guy that got on tapes.
No, that's the guy that went out to Colorado.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
That guy looks like a
douchebag. Shane Bowers.
Okay.
Look it up, folks, if you haven't seen it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's actually Taves and Kane behind the curtain of the draft.
This guy looks like a douchebag.
Nice. Sorry we never got to know you, Bowers, but you're gone.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking, right, is you're going to see – and it gets crowded in a hurry because you did hear DJ Smith say, yeah, Shane White. White is going to play at center for us.
Yep.
And you're like, really? Because if you got Tierney, you got Stepan, you have Cedric Paquette in the fourth hole, you're looking at one spot where you're going to put White or you're going to put Logan Brown. Like, what are you doing?
You're not going to put Stützle. I know you mentioned earlier he's going to play left wing, but be worth looking at him in the middle.
Now, again, they've said right since draft night, they will play him on the wing this year.
Okay.
And so Dorion said it again And again, and he said it again on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve. But as you said, he also said, no, when directly asked, no, this is our roster moving forward. And that was on a Thursday. And then on a Saturday, he makes the Stephon trade. And then on the Sunday, he makes the other trade. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But DJ Smith did say, yeah, no, I want him on the wing this year. Does that mean he never skates a shift?
Nah.
Right.
It's not uncommon. Move a young center over and see what he does.
And Stephon is going to be late arriving. His wife just had their third baby. So you will see. Excuse me, man. You will see Norris and Brown both get an opportunity in the early goings, I think.
Just seemed like Stephon to me wasn't necessary.
But I think at the end of the day, I think what you do is you bring him in. He's only 30 and he will be gone at the end of this year.
Yeah.
And one you way kind or another. Of right. And now with the Sens glasses fully on, right, you hope that he's a hardworking guy. Like he's a go in the corners guy. He's gritty. He'll do all the things to win. And if he can play, you know, up to the trade deadline, you know, play him with, you know, in between Batherson and Stützle, right? On a second line, right? Let him show guys how to do things, not just talk about it, but to do it. And then if he has a good enough season, flip him at the trade deadline.
I wonder if this has crossed your mind at all or what your thoughts are on it. A friend of the show, Graham Nichols, the Sixth Sens, he put out the other day when all this was breaking that general managers tend to look their best tearing it down, right? It's not hard to sell off NHL players for picks and prospects. And Dorion's done a nice job with that, especially with a reputation of being a guy who can run a good draft. But when you start to rebuild it, that's when the warts start to show again. And he looked at the Derek Stephon trade as kind of a, this is what the Sens have done under Pierre Dorion, is grab pieces just slightly past their prime or where things might suggest this wasn't worth doing. Maybe in some cases, good in the room means no longer good on the ice, or just somebody that other teams don't want anymore for other reasons. You know,
or they've already paid him his $3 million signing bonus.
Well, there is that part of it. There's always the financial aspect in Ottawa. I wonder if that, when you looked at that deal, did that sort of thing march back into your mind, or was it more just of a, fine, placeholder for a year and it's not of really any consequence?
Yeah, I didn't really feel that way. I agree with what he's saying in principle, and that is, it's super easy, right, to start trading off your star players because people are going to take those.
Yep.
Right? And you look like a king now on the Carlson trade, right? Mm-hmm. People are saying that's a stud move. And then you go, then there's the Brännström essentially straight up for Mark Stone. You go, that maybe you could have done better, right? So not just any trained chimp.
Well, you and I both loved that deal at the time. Brännström at the time looked like the best defenseman coming. And maybe he still will be, but not yet.
Correct.
Yeah.
We don't know that.
Yeah.
And so it is one of those things. And so, yeah, it's super hard, the balancing act between continuing to progress young athletes and you know, sprinkle in with. I would have been more concerned if Stephon rolls in and you're sweetening the pot for him to come to Ottawa,
right,
and you're giving him an extension.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
No, you're right.
Right. So to me at this point, it's a worst case scenario. You have all these guys like Good Branson expiring after this, Mike Riley expiring after this year, Paquette expiring, you know, Stephon, Coburn, right? Like yada, yada, yada. All these contracts will be gone. Yeah. It's what he does this year.
Right.
Right. Coming up to this trade deadline and moving into 21-22. That will be where the whole thing will really do not, you know, if Stephon has a good half a year, man, don't extend that guy.
No.
Because the best before value is decreasing as you can see it happening. So, no.
Absolute best case scenario on that guy is you can get another second for him at the trade deadline. He rubbed off on somebody, set some good work ethic and you know, good practice routines and whatever else, and you get what you paid for him back. I don't know that you'll get that again, but you might. You might. If you can get a second out of that after a couple months of him with your young guys, you know, that's probably a wash. But I'm not convinced you'll somebody's going to give you a second for him again. We'll see. Though.
Somebody else's B plus prospect.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have sure. more depth prospects, those sorts of things. Right. And you sort of go at it that way. I do not feel badly about it. I think in this year and we've done this before in past shows, you start to run through the Canadian division and there's some stud centers out there.
Yep.
Right. And so what happens is now worst case scenario, you throw Tierney and step on up in the 1-2 slot. Those are the guys who are taking the brunt of your Matthews, your Tavares, your Pettersson. McDavid's, your Pettersons, your Dreisaitl's, you know what I mean? Like your Scheifele's. As you work around, you go, there's not a lot of weak spots
right.
in terms of the Canadian division and the centers. And you go, do I want to expose Stützle, Norris, to a lesser extent, Brown? Because I think all those guys will see some action, right?
Yeah, because so, there is that balancing I act. When do you do it? Like at some point, you throw them to the Wolves, but when, right? And I think this is one of those years, same way I talked about Stützle. To me, this is kind of, I get they want to turn the corner this year. I get they want to move up a little bit. But to me, if you already are reasonably comfortable that you're the last place team in this division, get your feet wet, right? Get in there. Logan Brown, let's see what you can do, right? Colin White, right. Let's see what you can do. Josh Norris, let's see. I didn't need Derek Stepan to... But
yeah, see, I feel okay with it. I feel like you're going to get an opportunity because this is a team with some of the changes and will be a more competitive team.
Yep.
This is a team that is likely going to finish seventh. And if everything, and I mean everything pie in the sky clicks, you maybe can finish sixth or fifth, but you were never making the playoffs.
No.
So it does afford you the opportunity to not have them feel the brunt of a losing season all the time, but it does allow you to sprinkle that in.
Yeah.
Right. I think in a best case scenario, you can do a little, you can be competitive. You can expose them a bit, but not have them feel the full force.
Yeah.
Of
not
it.
Getting buried night after night after night.
Correct.
And there is something to that. And that's legit too. To me, it's probably just you wanting to see the good in it and me wanting to see the bad in it. Yep. And the truth is probably a flip of the coin. You go, yeah, some nights it'll have turned out for the best. Some nights, yeah, you probably would have been better off with the kid and whatever Correct. Else it looks like. So,
but I will be interested to see how this shakes out at the end of the season.
Yeah. No, if you can get some for any of these guys, you know, trade off and get a third here and a second there and whatever else, then it was probably worthwhile. So nothing wrong in that regard. I think that's probably about it for this one. You know, we sort of expected there might be a little bit more news on day one of camp, but there wasn't. But things will heat up as we go. For everyone outside of the seven teams who started a couple days ago, it was really just off-ice physicals and stuff today. You saw some names that didn't report, but other than that, not a ton there. So we'll keep these going. The season is only 11 days away, even as we sit here now. So there'll be tons of hockey to talk about. Don't forget, on Thursday evening, we'll have a new show up with Michaela Schreider. She's going to have an announcement to make for us on that podcast as well. So hope you'll stick around for that one. But I think that's it for tonight, man.
What do we do? Are we going to do any kind of previews?
Yeah, I guess. It's 11 days away. I don't What did we just do? Was that not? That's a preview, folks. You're set.
There you go. The North Division done.
I don't know that we'll go division by division or whatever, but we'll be talking a lot of hockey between now and next Wednesday, and we can certainly take a look at you know, some sort of.
Yeah, well, and we'll be.
It won't be an episode per division like we've done in past years. I can tell you that.
That is clearly not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be interested. When you and Michaela are on next, there'll be a World Junior Hockey Championship gold medalist crowned. And so I'll be tuned in, Matt.
I know. There was always a commercial for Primetime Sports that used to run on Sportsnet back in the day when Bob McCowan was first one of theirs. And he always talked about, it's crazy to me that when I take vacation, people still listen to Primetime Sports because when I'm not on the radio, I don't listen to the radio.
Is the radio still on when I'm not on it?
Exactly. So that's some good stuff. We will, like I said, we'll be back later in the week with at least one or two shows. And if anything bigger breaks, you know, we'll do something beforehand. But
you'll hear from us.
Of course. In the meantime, we are on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio, and make sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening to this one. And we will see you all next time.
See ya!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.